So I guess I'll finish off the presentation for tonight. I'm standing up because I grew up in St. John's, and I love the idea that although I was not a good enough singer to sing on the stage, I can now get on the stage in front of people and do something. woohoo! I might have been guilty of a few oohs and ahs here and there, but no lead singer situation. So I say that in jest, but also seriously in the sense that I am from Newfoundland. I went away for a long time and came back, a long time in my life, you know, it's probably 4 years, but it seems long. And I decided to come back because I love this place. But when you, if you've left and come back, I think one thing you're forced to realize is Newfoundlanders have a certain pride and a certain semi-nationalist attitude that I think kind of forms a lot of the way that we respond when people, especially CFAs, if you don't know what CFAs are, then you're not in our club, so I'm not even going to explain it. If that's, you know, it informs the way that we respond to CFAs when they criticize what we're doing. And I really believe this, especially if people mistake me for a CFA sometimes, like on my ice hockey team and stuff, and they say things to me as if we are like the out club, I'm forced to then realize that there is this situation where people don't want to be super critical, especially of the oil industry and of the way this province is committed to sort of garnering profits for itself. So for that reason, I would hope now, after hearing a sort of optimistic, sort of pessimistic mix of reflections on the current situation, that as somebody from Newfoundland with some background in various disciplines, I would be able to talk to you a little bit about Newfoundland, the oil industry, and where we're going, and whether or not anybody gives a shit about climate change when talking about oil in Newfoundland. So I think that climate change is really a global issue whose actors and main factors seem to kind of evade us. They seem to be impersonal, and they seem to be impenetrable. Corporate bodies, industry influencers, all of these people seem to make our personal attempts to reduce our own greenhouse gas or CO2 emissions to futile, right? So it seems like taking metro bus or riding your bike or whatever doesn't really make a difference in the face of such actors. And so our individual efforts can appear quite inconsequential in face of the problem, seemingly pushing many people into a state of apathy. But presumably, not everybody has met this issue of climate change with complete resignation. Not everybody has covered their eyes and ears in a situation of actually coming out to hear why it is we would even care about it in the first place. Should we care about it? Do we care about it? Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be listening to us. We wouldn't have this the space even, I think, to open this conversation. But how much does the question, do we care, how much is it entangled with, are we going to do anything about it? Are we optimistic that we can do anything about it? So the answer, I think, so do we care about climate change? It has to, in this context, be, you know, for all of you, for me standing here, a qualified yes, if we're going to say that we came in purpose of discussing this. So a yes, but, right? A yes, but I feel my actions are inconsequential. A yes, but not many others seem to care. A yes, but I don't have faith in our government or in multinational corporations to actually do anything about it. And indeed, this gets back to the perspective of why we can somehow know about it, but not really do anything about it or know about it in a sense that would actually propel us into acting. So I do think that many of us care about our future generations. I'm with you, Barry, on that one. And I do think our common home matters to people. And in this sense, we do minimally care about climate change. So when it comes down to the wire, I really do think that in our hearts and, you know, our whole being, we care about our personal relationships, and that we want the well-being and we want the security of knowing that our children or our friends or the future generations or however it makes sense to you, we want to know that they will be okay. So we do care about others, and this is the kind of easy argument out of nihilism, out of total despair, saying that we want to make sure somehow that life goes beyond us, right? Maybe that's the philosophical point. But if the common feeling is that our individual efforts, so the philosophy of everyone does their own part, does not produce an effective force against climate change, to what extent then can we, those who concede that we care about the future of our planet and our children as a connected issue, we who also admit, frankly, if you've read, you can either read Pope Francis' encyclical or you can read the hard data on what's going on in the third world. We who admit that climate change affects mostly poor people, people who work in countries and conditions that are different from our own. To what extent can this we collectively act and do something about climate change? The fantasy of a global community, frankly, seems to have little relevance on how we lead our lives. This is just my kind of observation. I think often lately about how the clothes we wear and the products we consume and the chips in my MacBook, they are made in deplorable conditions that if I honestly had to witness them, I'm not sure that I would be able to swallow them. And I think most of us live in that type of world. The disparity between the rich and the poor on a world scale, so the fact that about 800 million people are living on less than $2 a day, should detonate any of our illusions, I think, about a global community and about interpersonal care actually being possible on an international scale. So thus, although we know that climate change is a global issue, it often seems that we depend on large governmental organizations and state representatives to actually do something about it. But obviously, these actors are failing miserably. I don't want to talk about Trump, but the fact that Trump hauled out of Paris Agreement and made it clear that the U.S. wasn't going to pay the $3 billion towards the Global Climate Care Fund, and instead professes the lies that he does, in particular with this kind of mythic focus, right, on the coal industry and also natural gas and the blue-collar worker, this way he has of talking that's so appealing. You want to talk about if people think we're in a rational world, in a scientific world. What's Trump appealing to? Doesn't seem to be reason. He's appealing to this feeling, right, of the coal workers and this type of, Amalaga, this once upon a go, feeling of what America was built on, on whose backs. And if that's really the case, then first of all, I guess there's no commitment to sort of to reason going on. But second of all, it's clear that climate change is not obviously on the top of his agenda. I think I read a thing the other day that said how many times Trump tweeted against climate change. It was like almost 200 or something like that. Anyway, you can look up those tweets if you're bored. It's fascinating. But frankly, what I find, and I've always found this weird, right, about being Canadian, is that we are so pent up sometimes on defining ourselves in contradistinction to Americans. I definitely realized this while living in Europe, and people said, you pulled out of the Kyoto Accord. We're not that much better. We really, 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 really aren't on this scale. On the scale of actual intervention and policy and commitment, I think, to actually doing something about climate change. So, despite pressure from the UN, if you've been reading the news, you see that we still have no plans on how to make the 2030 Paris Accord targets, and that this is largely due, it seems to be, just a lack of will, frankly, to stop developing fossil fuels. And that's the problem in Canada, and that's the problem in Newfoundland. Obviously, anybody who gets up here and says, halt oil production in the name of climate change, even though oil has finally reached whatever amount per barrel, this is going to be looked on as a crackpot, right? If you live outside of the walls of certain disciplines in the university, I really think that that's not a plausible response to people in this province or even in this country. So then back to the question that was on the poster, right? Do we really care about climate change? Who is the we? Who is the we? So global community doesn't exist. Individual action is futile. Okay, so for a new earth, we have committed to Newfoundland and Labrador. I committed to Newfoundland and Labrador. I think, frankly, most of you have. You live on a rock that's very hard and expensive to get off of. And so if you've committed to Newfoundland and Labrador this way, I hope, and it sincerely is my hope, that this we can somehow be Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, and frankly, a lot of people in the department, my partner also, CFAs as well, who have committed to living here. So as I said, For a New Earth has committed to this Newfoundland and Labrador dimension of our organization. And the idea is that we can act locally, but always thinking globally, which is why this topic is even pertinent right now, right? This is kind of a global, it is a global topic, undoubtedly. But we're here in the ship with people from Newfoundland trying to appeal to some we. And I'm trying to define this we. Let's try it. Newfoundland and Labrador and CFAs who call themselves or decided to live here. So the way that people relate to each other in Newfoundland and Labrador has always seemed to be tied to the land, from our music and our history and our industry and our culture. And I honestly think this for better or for worse. So the narrative of our political and economic history, as Dr. Jerry Bannister, among others, has shown, is tied up with this sort of Newfoundland nationalism, which in my opinion has been both productively motivating and frankly sometimes stubbornly impeding. So I just want to propose that in reference to the question posed here today, so do we really care about climate change, that this we could be Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, and again, the associated people who want to be Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, and that through this connectedness to one another and the shared identity, that we could actually somehow use it for good, you know? And I think we have done that on multiple occasions. I'm not a total pessimist. I think that our responses, for example, even most recently to the Fort McMurray fires, to the Froude Avenue here in St. John's fires, also, you know, people like to talk about our response to 9/11, that we have used this idea that somehow we can get 500,000 people in a certain way to commit to something. I believe that. We can do something good with that, and I hope to somehow garner that and see if there's a possibility for that we to make decisions in the future that are not so committed to one thing and one thing only, that is the development of fossil fuels, frankly, for better or for worse. Because if we've seen anything with Muskrat Falls, it's that you want to talk about mythic sort of ideas of how Newfoundland is going to prosper. Well, they're certainly one, right? So these ideas that of how we're going to go forward, that they be based on something that comes out of this or that's related to this common identity and this possibility of genuine care in this province, but that's not necessarily tied to profits from the oil industry. So could this collective identity love our unique, along with what I think is frankly a really unique ecological position or disposition, promise into doing something about climate change? Could the we even somehow become a collective actor against climate change or with a consciousness for climate change? You know, if the answer would entail a total renunciation of oil profits in the name of ideology, I have to be a pessimist. I think the answer is no. But in Canada and Newfoundland and Labrador alike, as I said, if it's profitable to drill and extract oil, I think we're going to do it. Because oil companies, although they may adapt varying strategies in the direction of either greenwashing or slowing down their production rates, we always need to be skeptical, right, as to why they're doing that. So I saw a presentation recently in the economics department by I think it was vice president of Nalcor, and he was talking about this very issue, but obviously in defense of Nalcor. But he was showing that people have shown Norway and Denmark, right, to be very effective examples of how you can still be very profitable by slowing down the production of oil. But he was also clear, in sort of a defense of Nalcor, of course, that this strategy is meant so that they're sort of proverbially going to be the last man standing. So whatever company this was, the idea was to basically persist longer than all the other actors and thus actually have a monopoly on it in the end and go further. So, you know, there's always this sort of side of, you know, conniving deception that I think that when we think about anything that's sort of profit-driven, we need to keep in mind. And on top of that, it's noteworthy that small lifestyle changes by Newfoundlanders and Labradorians towards reducing personal carbon emissions will not stop these huge corporations or factories in our own backyards from producing fossil fuels. Worse again is that, I mean, I hope we know this by now, Canada actually exports most of its fossil fuels out of the country, right? So this idea that we're just going to do it at home and we're going to live better lives and that eventually no one in Canada is going to be burning fossil fuels and thus Canada will stop producing oil, that's wrong, right? Objectively, like that's not the framing of the issue. So a decrease in our local carbon footprint, I'm not sure it's going to have this significant impact on Canada's decision whether to expand or not future oil production. So in our province, after the devastating decrease of oil prices in recent years and the effect on our local economy, I think it's obvious, and I'm not an economist, I like to hang around with them, but I'm not one, but we should diversify what are the sources of our income, right? That just seems to be common sense, even out of, you don't need to be thinking out of climate change issues to assert that. And I think that if we were to choose solutions in the future that specifically make a step away from, the oil and gas industry, there are two major factors to consider here. One, the current political situation, and two, the relationship between our lifestyles and the geography or infrastructure here. And again, this can be spoken about positively or negatively. It's just the fact that we have a really unique place, right? Rock, like the way that this place is that if, unless you're like, that one French guy or Robin Whittaker, you probably can't bike up Long's Hill super fast, right? So there's just a situation where, you know, maybe cycling is not our way towards sustainability. I didn't expect that to be that funny, but, okay. So there is a specific relationship between these things, right? So lifestyle and geography, and there's interesting analyses, I'm sure, in geography and in anthropology about these things. But in terms of the first point I made, so the political situation, as I mentioned, it's indisputable now, I think. I hope I'm not pissing anybody off by saying that, but that Muskrat Falls is a failure, which has screwed the future of large-scale green economy in this province, right? So when initiatives in small countries like Denmark or Norway, like I mentioned, are proposed as an alternative, as a way that we could think about moving our energies into something like wind power, what politician in Newfoundland is going to take that on? Seriously, right? Okay, so now we've had a couple of disasters. We're in completely over our head on Muskrat Falls, trying to decide about who's going to pay for it, essentially. Is it going to be us on our electric bills? Which, incidentally, would actually contribute, arguably, Jim Fien has made this argument, I get it right, to looking for alternatives then to not having a high electric bill, so coal burning or stoves or whatever, that would actually increase carbon emissions. So either we're looking at this type of problem, or just a situation that's totally bleak for anybody who enters politics in this province. And I was reading about it recently that apparently about half of the municipalities in the recent municipal elections won by default, something like that. So literally nobody wants to be a politician in this province right now. Full respect to you if you are, because it's a big burden to bear, especially on the provincial level. So my point is that anybody who starts ideologically proposing large, in my opinion, right, argue with it, I don't know the exact science is a lot of wind energy and green energy, but just on a practical level is my opinion that if you're going to propose that as an alternative right now, find me literally a politician who's going to take that on in Newfoundland and Labrador. And then moving to the second point that I was making, again, about the relation between our lifestyles and geography, I think that, you know, if we're going to step away from fossil fuels, if we're going to actually look for different options, there are a couple of ways, again, that we could go about it. But I think that especially, on the first level, come on, right, like the CBS sprawl in St. John's and the cars and the idea that there's absolutely no incentive to not drive a vehicle in this town or not drive a vehicle around Newfoundland. There's no deterrence if you buy a humongous pickup truck. I know I was sort of bleak about the idea of how much we can effectuate change on the individual level. But frankly, you know, if you're going to start with some collective policy or if you're going to start doing something as Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, might want to make that a bit problematic, right? The fact that you can just drive pickup trucks and park them over two spots in downtown St. John's, it's no big deal, things like this. And I think that, like, our shared geography poses certain challenges as well for air travel that I'm not really sure how to rectify. Just the fact that it's so hard to get off this island, and whether or not there are actual infrastructural solutions to that, I would be interested in hearing. But it again gets back to the particularity of this province and the idea that when someone from Europe comes and says, oh, well, you should have streetcars and you should have, mass trains going across your country. It's like, okay, well, the railway's been gone for so long now and I don't see it coming back anytime soon because of problems X, Y, Z that some urban planner can definitely lay out. Maybe the solutions we need to think of are different and maybe they do involve some sort of collective individual mobilization of policy. So this is maybe where I would agree with Barry a bit. But there are things, like I said, that we can change about our lifestyle, and I think that we need to think about that going forward. And, you know, at the end, I told you, I've kind of been hanging around The Economist because I realize, like, I don't have that much hard knowledge on the, future of profit-driven industry in this province. But I can tell you that they have really shown me at least how bleak the situation is. But what's really interesting, if you watch Wade Locke's talks, he always ends with this question about, here's the data, you're the philosopher, his office is pretty close to mine. He says, you gotta decide what you want, is what he always says. Decide what you want in Newfoundland. You do not know what kind of society that you want. And I think what he means by that is we can't decide whether or not we need to be the next Alberta or the next Quebec. We can't decide whether we want our taxes to be as low as possible or have a healthcare system that takes care of us so well that we are actually the highest spending province per capita in all of the age groups for healthcare. So there's some cultural issue going on there. And I think that, you know, if we're going to actually literally save this rock from sinking. I hope that some of the stuff that we're doing with For a New Earth, this type of discussion, you know, interdisciplinary work, etc., can change just the disposition. I don't have a solution for you, but I hope that the disposition of thinking can be changed so that when we come collect, we're 500,000 people. It's a lot and it's also not so many. When we come to this point of caesura, when we come to literally the break, where someone says, oil industry, literally no more, literally not sustainable, not even $2 million, nothing coming from oil industry anymore, that when the next set of options are presented in front of us, hopefully climate change will be one of the many factors that we'll consider. And frankly, I think that's the best we can hope for.